407, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead. Well, hello, Todd.
Hello, John.
Yep. We have another wonderful day.
Indeed.
And I bet you're glad you're in California because the temperature here in Massachusetts is quite chilly.
It's warmer here in Northern California. Yes. And there's no ice falling from the sky.
We had that just a day ago. Yep. Winter is finally here. In fact, it seems like it's earlier this year. But anyway.
It is. It's not even officially winter for a couple of weeks. We're recording this on December 10th, for those of you who are wondering when this is happening. December 10th, 2025, that is.
Yes. Well, today we were talking earlier before the show, we're talking about the statistics that the FAA is leaking out, and some of them that have been leaked out in the past about the general aviation accident rate. I think we can have a little discussion about that and maybe a little bit more later.
Indeed.
As we start to digest some of these numbers. But, you know, one of the first things that jumps out at me when I look at this is general aviation airplanes. And the accident rate that they're using for GA airplanes is fatal accidents per 100,000 hours. Well, GA airplanes don't ever get anywhere near 100,000 hours. And I think that might be doing the industry a disservice by not having it more realistic in the terms of what does a general aviation aircraft accumulate in roughly a year, and maybe make it a little bigger than that. But, it takes an awful lot of GA airplanes to make 100,000, and that certainly could impact the rate. Especially since, you know what, there's a lot of GA airplanes that are registered that don't fly. I have a friend of mine that has an airplane that hasn't flown in many, many years, but he keeps registering it. It's out of annual, so he needs to have an annual, but it's been sitting a long time.
And not to make too fine a point of it, but when it comes to accidents disproportionately happen during takeoff and landing. Now, the FAA, and those of you watching the video version of this, we're showing you a graphic that is a FAA handout that compared GA accident rates over a number of years. Well, one of the things I always ask myself when I see a chart of numbers is, okay, they're talking about how this particular thing, GA accident rate, changes over time. Is that good or bad compared to what? Well, we go over to the NTSB, which has a very similar set of statistics for GA, but they also list Part 121 carriers, which are your large airline type aircraft, and Part 135, not the same as Part 121 aircraft as far as regulations and requirements, but it is a higher level of flying than GA. And you can see from looking at, this is a sample set of statistics from 2023, the last year that's available, just by eyeballing it, looking at the number of accidents, there are so many more accidents for GA per 100,000 hours than it is for airline and the other accident. For Part 121 and Part 135 carriers, there are about 68 accidents, compared to general aviation's 1,150. And you say to yourself, okay, how does that compare? Well, look over on the right side. They have the flight hours for part 121, part 135. Together, it's about 24 million flight hours. Strangely enough, it's about the same number of flight hours for general aviation. So you say to yourself, oh, they had the same exposure to risk number of flight hours. But looking at the numbers, there's 68 for part 121 and part 135, but 1,150 for general aviation. I'm doing some quick math in the top of my head here, but is general aviation really 15 times worse per flight hour than the air carriers and part 135 commuters? Well, like I said before, most of your risk is in takeoff and landing, and that those phases of the flight, the early part of the flight, the latter part of the flight. And strictly speaking, most air carrier aircraft have a long portion of their flight during cruise, which is the lowest risk portion of the flight. GA, not so much. In GA, you have everyone from flying G5s across the country or across the world to training aircraft like the ones I fly, where they might have on average, you know, roughly an hour per flight, including takeoff, landing, and being in the pattern. So maybe the risk is different, but you say to yourself, or I say to myself, is the risk really 15 times worse per flight hour for GA? If it is, if these numbers are right and that's an accurate measurement, then you got to ask yourself, well, I ask myself the question, is the average GA pilot, this is not a precise question, are they really 15 times worse than the average air carrier pilot? Worse in the sense of more apt to get into accidents? I don't think so. But the numbers are the numbers. So, you know, given these numbers, and they really haven't changed relative to airline and Part 135 for years. If you go to 2013, which I'm flashing on the screen for those of you watching the video, it's a similar sort of split. Air carriers in Part 135, way lower in the number of accidents versus general aviation. But if you add the flight hours for 121 and 135, it's not that much different from the flight hours for general aviation. I'm also flashing up an even earlier one from 2008, just so you can have a comparison to over a 10-15 year span. Has anything really changed? Has anything really changed with the rate of GA accidents? That kind of reflects what the FAA had. It shows a slight reduction over time, but like I said before, it might be a slight reduction in GA, but compared to what? I think that overall, the risk is getting lower for all kinds of flying, but the risk of general aviation, in my opinion, ideally, should be reducing faster than it is.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at the numbers for the last 6-7 years, from 22 to 17, 6 years. They stay pretty constant, 0.83, 0.89, 0.95, 0.91, and then there's a 0.75, and then another 0.90. I mean, they're pretty consistent, and that's on 100,000 hours flown. And I don't think that 100,000 is the right measurement for the smaller airplanes. It might do okay for Part 91 business aircraft that have had consistently a pretty low rate, but every once in a while they get a spike, and they had a few in the recent past where they spiked up for a couple of accidents. But those pilots and those operations tend to operate like a airline with the training requirements and a structure behind them. And that, as you were talking about the pilots, GA pilots, being different than commercial ones. I just had one with at an FBO that I was hanging around, and a young pilot. He's probably had his private's license for 6 months, I would think, if I'm trying to remember right. And he asked me if I wanted to go flying with him. It was windy as hell. And I said, have you checked the weather? He said, yeah, the weather's good. He said, I'm not going in. We're just going to stay in the local area. And I said, let's do the weather. And I forget what the numbers were, but the gusting winds in the area were sky high. I could see them, the people coming into the facility. The door blew out of the way once, blew open when they pulled the door. And many of the clothes were blowing in the breeze as they were leaving, coming from the parking lot, coming into the building. So I knew it was windy as hell out there. And I told him I wasn't going to go. It was too windy. And then he thought about it and he didn't go. But I wonder how many times, if I wasn't there and had him focus on the weather, I wonder if he would have gone and then had his flight much riskier than otherwise. You know, there's all sorts of intangibles in these accident rates.
And really, if you want to get into the details of why is GA such a higher rate, I'm making an assumption that it's not every GA pilot, every GA flight is the same. It's the same risk. There are some GA flights that will be higher risk than others. So my question is, which flights are those? Are those the ones that are training flights? Are those the ones with someone who's being flown by someone who has barely kept current with requirements for keeping their license or keeping their level of license? Is it from someone who's flying a airplane that's new to them? But what are the things that increase risk? And, you know, let's jump around a little bit. We have the NTSB. We have the FAA, which are two of the greatest sources for general information about what's going on with aviation and where the risks are. Well, during research for the show, I came across something which has been around for years, which I literally only found about last night, something called the General Aviation Joint Safety Committee. This is a public-private partnership between FAA and other entities where they have gotten together and basically listed a bunch of issues that are issues for general aviation. And those of you watching the screen, you can see a screenshot from the page where you can go down, click on one of these issues and find out more details about it. And I thought to myself, well, gee, we should suggest to GA pilots, if they want to take individual action to get better as a pilot and to avoid risky things, well, one thing you could do is sit down with yourself, have a conversation, say to yourself, where am I risky? Where am I least sure about my capabilities? What are the things I think I should do better? Look down this list they have on the General Aviation Joint Safety Committee. Click down on that. Find out more information about it. And then maybe do a little searching on the FAA website or elsewhere, or with your local instructor or with people you fly with, and say, hey, where can I find out more about this one area where I'm kind of weak on? And before we go further, what I'd like to do is talk about individual effort of one of our YouTube members, our new top-tier member, William Palmer, 9858. Thank you very much for joining us and being a top-tier member, where as a top-tier member, you get all sorts of benefits, including early access to our shows. And you'll be invited, if you're at the right level, to our live shows, which we are going to have one at the end of December, I believe the last week before Christmas, the Monday or before Christmas or thereabouts. Basically, if you're a top-tier member, you'll get a heads-up about it. You can join us for the live session. You can ask us questions directly, and we will answer it. And this is not just for individuals who want to be a top-tier member. Are you an entity in aviation that wants to address our audience, wants to sell something to our audience, wants to get your message out to our audience? Write to us, fsdsponsors@gmail.com, and we will work with you. And if you sponsor our show, one or more shows, and you happen to have a hat, I will wear your hat.
Well, you know what? I'm looking down the list of 10 most common causes for accidents, according to the Joint Safety Committee. And, you know, as I look, loss of control in flight. One of the things that we find deficient, and we're looking at accident reports, depending upon what year it was, from the NTSB, some of them are pretty thin in the factual side. They proved their point in loss of control, but there's an awful lot in there. And the number two item on the list is power system component failures. A lot of those may have something to do with maintenance. Boy, I'd like to see detailed breakdowns on all the engines that have that. And I tried to push that when I was with the NTSB, and I failed. Right, so it was always the money issue. It was always the money issue. And I guess from my conversations with folks at the NTSB now, the money issues are even greater than they were way back when I was there. So, and we did a lot more accidents, full reports than they do today because of the money So I don't know what the status of why the money's so tight, but other than the budget has been level funded for so long. And in the federal government, level funding is a cut because there's automatic pay raises every year and automatic progression pay raises every year. So the cost of the people that work there is growing, but the budget's been staying relatively flat. So that's not good for having money to do investigations with. But I mean, it's just, and he only, number five on here is flight into bad weather, what I was just talking about with that young guy. Now, he had already had his private license. He'd been building time. And that's another one that the oppression that's in it. And at the end of this show and every show that we've done in the past, I'm always talking about the pre-flight and after you get in the air to put your head on a swivel. There's an awful lot of people flying out there to build time and then not necessarily giving their full attention outside the airplane. And all of us that do fly need to pay attention outside the airplane. And admittedly, it's hard sometimes when you're the only one in the airplane and you're grinding away trying to build time and maybe the engine makes a noise and your head's down looking at the instruments trying to figure out what that noise was. It can be quite challenging at times. And throw in some bad weather and you throw in some bad decisions and you can see you're on the slippery slope to some not-so-good outcome.
Now, I did what I'm suggesting that the average general aviation pilot did. I just did it for myself. I looked at the list of items here. One of the ones that caught my eye was what they call SE-04, over-reliance on automation. Now, I fly a technically advanced aircraft, a Cessna 172 with a G1000 setup, and compared to what I first flew, a Cessna 172 in the 1970s, which was a steam gauge old-school airplane, there's a lot more to digest. And sometimes I get confused about what I should be doing and what I shouldn't be doing. I do a lot of practice on the ground, do a lot of practice on simulators, and I also fly. But maybe I should know more. In fact, I should know more. So I clicked on this, and they actually have some useful resources. One of them was NASA callback from September 2016 about automation dependency. And for those you don't know, NASA has the ASR system, the Aviation Safety Reporting System, which anyone can anonymously report things that went wrong, accidental violations, etc. And on occasion, NASA bundles a bunch of them together in a particular subject, in this case, automation dependency, and they put out a report. I'm going to look through this report, scan them, and see if there is a NASA callback, if there is a NASA ASRS input, rather. That sounds like something I did and learned from it. And they also talk about a safety alert for operators that came out from the FAA, an advisory circular that deals with currency requirements for flight review and instrument proficiency check. And again, as someone who's going to be going through that soon, that's something I'll probably review. And if my instructor doesn't tell me to do so, I'm going to come back here and do it as well. And then there's a fact sheet on over-reliance on automation. In other words, there's a lot of information out there. The FAA in particular publishes a whole lot of stuff, so much so that unless you're making an effort to chase down things, looking for things, you may not find it. Well, this is a resource which, for certain subjects, has done the searching for you. If you need more information on something, or if you need more education on a particular aspect of your flying, this is a good place to start. If you see that this stuff isn't good enough for you, this could be a jumping-off point. If what they suggest here isn't good enough, go look for something better.
Hello, aviation enthusiasts, safety professionals, and curious minds. Welcome to Flight Safety Detectives. We are thrilled that you dropped by. Here, we dive deep into the world of aviation safety, from incident investigations and technical analysis to lessons learned and what they mean for safer skies. As a member of our channel, you get exclusive member-only perks, first access to new episodes, live stream discussions, and Q&A sessions.
We are a community of fellow safety detectives who love aviation as much as you do. If you're passionate about aviation or just curious about how things work, we'd love to have you on board. Hit join, ring the bell to be notified, and jump into the discussions in the comments. Strap in, because together we're going to explore aviation safety like never before.
At Oshkosh this past year, 25, I sat on a hangar flying session with some flight instructors, and the discussion got on to about students only knowing how to fly the magenta line, and how many of them, when they have to deviate from that, get lost, you know, in the system, not lost physically, but getting lost how to work their way through the system when they have to go off the magenta line. And, you know, I learned to fly when we didn't have any of that. So you had to pay attention to situational awareness. I didn't even know what that meant, but I knew you had to pay attention to where you were at all times. And I guess it's not happening any time with the current generation that are just building time. The other one I note that take note on the causes of accidents is fuel starvation or fuel issues. And that still baffles me, how we get airplanes to run out of fuel. Yeah, I can understand it if you get caught in weather and there's no place to divert. You should have been paying attention first off. But once you get into it, you know, now you got a big problem. But there's other times I see good days where they run out of fuel. Either they don't select the right tank, or they assume that the two tanks, because they filled it up yesterday or the last time they flew it and they only flew for 2 hours, they figured it still had plenty. I don't know, but check and verify is, you know, one of our cardinal rules. And these are the areas that you're not going to see in an airline operation normally. You know, we saw it one a few times in the past, but normally you don't see that because there's so many checks and balances and other people that are checking on what's going on. In general aviation, that whole burden is on the pilot. And it is a burden sometimes. It just takes a long time to get in the air. And I see them, younger people usually, how impatient they are to get in the air. They come out to the airplane, they do lousy walk-arounds. And I see them not checking the fuel because they figured somebody else had flown it earlier, so everything's okay. I just shake my head. So you check your fuel on every flight, Todd?
Every flight. And when I'm doing my training flights, my usual thing I do is because of the organization I'm with, I fill it to the top. Yes, I pay for the fuel that I put in there. But when I fill the tank to the top, even for a flight around the pattern, the previous pilot has usually filled it fairly close to the top. So it's not like I'm filling up the tank all the way. But here's the thing. Because I know where I'm starting from every time, and because I double check, I have a dipstick sort of thing to check how much fuel is actually in there. I can, with confidence, know how much fuel I have, how much endurance I have for flying. And on top of that, if I'm taking off every time with the same fuel weight, it's not like on one flight I have X number of pounds in the aircraft. On another flight, I might have 50 pounds less. Yes, it might be only a slight difference in performance, but I know that the feel of the airplane should be fairly consistent weight-wise from flight to flight if I'm always taking off with a full tank of fuel. Now, this is not for the cases where I'm taking other people on, but if I'm doing solo flying, doing practice on my own, it's a certain level of comfort where if there's something just out of kilter, I might say to myself, this doesn't feel right. It's not handling the way it should, either handling heavy on the controls, light on the controls, whatever the case may be. Taking that variable out of the equation means I don't have to worry about that when I'm flying.
Yeah. Well, the cost of that fuel at airports, if you got your own airplane, you're responsible for all the fuel.
And for those of you who are worried about the price of fuel, there's never been a time in my flying career where I said to myself, gosh, the fuel today is really, really cheap. No. It's always a premium price compared to automobile fuel. And it's just one of these things where there are a lot of things with aviation where you can't avoid it. It might be a high cost relative to what you think it should be. Well, don't compromise the quality of your flight or the ability of your airplane by saying, you know what, let me shave a little corner here. Let me not fill up the tank all the way. Let me not take the extra time to take another course. Let me not take hours out of my day, which I've already taken hours out of my day to fly. Do I have to spend another hour in pre-flight or half hour in pre-flight? Again, we're not going to lecture you here or, you know, shake our finger at you. We've done that enough. What we're trying to give here is resources where you, the pilot, or someone else involved in aviation, you don't have to be a pilot to learn from this. You can be like one of our previous guests here. You can be a ramp rat who doesn't fly but aspires to fly. Well, what you see in your day-to-day work could inspire you to figure out, oh, this is interesting. Where can I find out more about it? Well, we just gave you a resource today that you can use to drill down on what you don't know, what you're unsure of, and get to be a little bit more competent as a person in aviation, not just as pilot. Anyone in aviation who's looking for more insight as to the reality they're living in. My gosh, that sounds like a second to last word to me.
It does. And we probably should keep it there. I think we're going to continue on in this rain, this light, on this vein of information and some of our podcasts in the future.
Indeed.
Because it definitely needs to have some more discussion. And I'd like to dig into some of these items, loss of control in flight, and really break that down. If that really is very high on the list, then let's break it down and see what the circumstances around loss of control are, and engine problems, and you know, unknown or undetermined is another interesting one. So anyway, we'll continue on with this, and I will give my usual last word, which will be, if you're going to go flying, please do a good job of pre-planning your flight. The weather, don't be so excited. I'm talking to a lot of the young people building time. Don't be so excited that you're going to go flying because you're going to get another 2 hours in today, because it's you have the ability to have 2 hours to spare to fly. But Mother Nature may not make that 2 hours available to you in a way that fits within your capabilities. So please, you got to weigh all of that stuff out before you get to the airport. After you get to the airport, a good pre-flight's important. And the younger people really need to have some walk-around time with the more experienced people on what to look at. I still go back to a damn Mooney accident that I worked in, and the pre-flight was not good for multiple times as the flight control on the elevators was working its way loose, and it finally became fully loose and he lost control and killed three people. So, I mean, and it's right out in the open. You could have seen it, just looked at it closely. Not even, you know, just closely. I see too many people that don't get down on their knees and look under their airplane on some of the low rings, like the Moonies. So there's all sorts of pieces to this puzzle for a pre-flight. And you've got to do it right, because we catch so many problems before flight. And the ones we don't catch end up on this accident list. So it's not good. You had a good experience with that, Dot.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll cut it off. I'll cut my going. Please fly safely. But why don't you share that last piece with the experience you had?
Well, this was a couple of years ago. I was when I was still living in Boston, I was going out to take my plane on a solo flight, and I was doing a pre-flight inspection. And I noticed that I got to one of the wings that the hardware holding some of the pieces together, the aileron and whatnot, looked brand new. I thought, gosh, on the other way, I went to the other wing. You had a little bit of dirt and grime, normal wear and tear you would see on something like that. But on the other wing, it looked spanking brand new. And I asked around after I got back. It's like, why is the hardware on that side of the wing newer than the other wing. Well, it turns out the aircraft had been in maintenance for a long time because there was a wing strike event and the wing had to be replaced. And I got a little bit of pushback because I was asking around. It's like, look, can I look at the maintenance logs on this? Because I just want to see for my own eyes what was done and any write-ups that happened. And there was some resistance that's like, well, we don't want you to look at the maintenance logs because we have rules. It's like, okay, I have a rule too. If a wing has been taken off my aircraft and replaced, I want to know the story behind it. By the way, I did a FOIA request for the story behind it. That is the actual event itself, air traffic control tapes. And even though I wasn't able to get the maintenance logs on that, I was able to go through another route and get additional information that made me feel a little bit more comfortable about that airplane. I eventually did fly in it again. But if I'd known ahead of time that day that, hey, Todd, this airplane you're taking, we just replaced the wing last week. It's like, really? Can I take another airplane this week? Give me some time to think this over before I take this airplane out again. That's just me.
Well, that kind of stuff is what's needed more of. And I don't understand why they didn't let you see the maintenance log.
Well, I would have pursued that further, but I moved to another state and I have another organization which is not giving me pushback on that type of thing. So I'm happy with my current situation.
Okay. Well, we'll be back again, folks, with some more looking at general aviation. And you know what? You know, another thing that just came to my mind. I wonder how many of these accidents in general aviation have commercial pilots, mainly airline pilots, at the controls. That'd be interesting to look at.
And I'm sure someone in our audience might already be looking into that. And if you are, please email us about it.
Yes. Yes. The email list is getting larger and larger. We get more and more people emailing in. In fact, I'm due to go through some of them this week. It's quite a pile. Okay. Remember, please, please fly safely.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really value all of our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you. So if you like this, give us 5 stars inside your podcast platform.
We want to keep the conversation going with you. So we'd love for you to engage with us on our social media channels. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetodetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're working on growing this channel, and it really helps if you all comment. So please do that. We read them all.
And be sure to subscribe.
For decades, Avemco Insurance Company has been an advocate for pilot safety by promoting and sponsoring continuous pilot training and education. One of their initiatives has been to reward pilots who actively participate in being more proficient with savings on their insurance premium through the Avemco Safety Rewards Program. Pilots save by earning new ratings, getting recurrent training, participating in the Fast Team Wing program, and listening to podcasts like ours and other Avemco-related courses and training. Call 888-879-0389 for a free quote or visit avemco.com/flightsafety. Don't forget to tell them the Flight Safety Detective sent you for an automatic 5% off.